Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, October 31st. Oh, yeah, happy Halloween. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. And thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And that's about to change the Pacific Standard
right.
Time.
That's right. Daylight savings. Huh?
Yes. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com.
All right. Today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got another great show for you today. It's going to include how many antidepressants, what percent of people in the U.S. are actually using antidepressants, and what does that say for our culture?
And how steroid medications and menopause are both tied to vitamin D deficiency.
And what's going on with too many surgeries in the elderly? People who are just a month away from death are often getting surgeries that maybe they don't need.
And how much exercise is needed to reduce early mortality risk significance?
Do you want to understand the difference between generic drugs and those that are brand names and why the prices are different and why you can get them in different places and what the markups are? We're going to learn a lot about that today.
Plus, if you want to join in our conversation and you have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
It sure feels good to be well. At the end of a long saga of healthcare problems from just my hip. So we're not going to have to talk about it much today. I think it turned out all okay. At least we'll see. So far, this is 2 weeks since my surgery, and I'm walking without any support and doing pretty well. In fact, I went back to work last week. So I think things are going a little better this time than last time.
You know, when you hear the statistics of depression and anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder, bulimia, post-traumatic stress in the U.S., it's huge. And then when the government researchers come out with antidepressants being used for all of our disorders, with more than 1 in 10 Americans over the age of 12 on an antidepressant, and antidepressants the third most common drug used by Americans of all ages, what does this say for our culture?
Isn't that the truth? I mean, it's an amazing feat of advertising that Big Pharma can actually get 1 in 10 Americans to buy their products. And that means about 10 million Americans, 30 million Americans are taking antidepressants. Think of the incredible sales from that, and think of the unbelievable overuse. Because our bodies don't have deficiencies of things like Prozac or Zoloft.
That's right.
What they have is they're suffering from not feeling well and feeling down because of what their life situation is like. I mean, what do you think Occupy Wall Street is all about? America is definitely depressed. In fact, the bulk of the world is because it's oppressed.
Well, and you know, the other thing that I thought was interesting about this article and this survey was that not that many people are really seeing mental health professionals. They're just popping these pills. I think most of them are getting them from their general practitioners.
They are. And it's like, what are they thinking? Why would you even begin to think of an antidepressant to solve a problem? Because antidepressants never, ever, ever, ever deal with the underlying cause. They just change around your neurotransmitters, your serotonin and dopamine and your norepinephrine and about 1,000 other neurotransmitters as well that we don't focus much on. And that does change the way you feel, but it does nothing to change your problem. And when I see psychiatry moving in the direction of taking pills rather than doing psychotherapy, it like blows my mind. How in the world?
There's a time and a place for the pills, and
no doubt. I mean,
there are certain times that people really do need something to help them out here, and if they see somebody that can help them with therapy, you know, whatever way it is, psychiatry, psychology.
Well, it's not cost effective, Vicky. That's the problem. See, psychotherapy costs a lot of money because it takes a long time to deal with the underlying problems, And who doesn't have a dysfunctional family that left us with triggers that cause lots of problems later in life?
Well, there are things that people can do in their lives to help out too. You know, things like exercise and meditating and yoga and and sound healing with music and mm-hmm. And being outside, getting more vitamin D, being with your friends.
Sure,
there's that body mind connection. Sometimes body work helps and essential oils help. And it was interesting because right after I was reading about this study, I got an email from a friend that was talking about some of these plant adaptogens. Maybe we could talk about those a little bit because they certainly seem pretty effective for working as antidepressants.
Well, they do some rather amazing things.
You know, they're non-toxic.
Well, they're non-toxic and they do a lot to balance the problems that we have in our body. I think what you could call an adaptogen is something that balances body function to restore a more normal homeostasis or more normal physiology, whether there's overfunction or underfunction. So these things that are found in nature are natural, of course, and they're not extracts that some pharmaceutical company has taken to try and maximize its effects, and usually at the price of lots of side effects.
And you may have heard of some of them, things like ashwagandha mm-hmm. and Asian ginseng, mm-hmm. and there's something called Eleuthero, Eleuthero, mm-hmm. and that's supposed to enhance well-being also, and then rhodiola. And these things seem to work in a pretty safe way.
Well, here we are now talking out of both sides of our mouth. I think that we're poo-pooing taking the SSRI antidepressants, and we're saying, hey, but there are these botanicals you could try.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying myself mm-hmm. is that rather than taking a drug mm-hmm. that's an antidepressant that can have really bad side effects,
right.
if you really are that depressed and that anxious and whatever, mm-hmm. and you need to take something, how about trying something that's safer first?
A lot less dangerous in terms of side effects. They've been around for thousands of years and have a long track record. They seem to work pretty well. And I would agree with you that in some settings, while you're doing the work to try something like one of these herbs in the right way, go to a good herbalist who can guide you with that, and chances are you're going to do very well. So I like the idea of looking at each individual patient and trying to find something that makes sense for them. What I don't like is the idea of a one-size-fits-all program, and that's what's happening when it comes to the use of drugs in general, but particularly antidepressants. And it's why our psychiatrists are reimbursed more for treating with drugs than they are for doing psychotherapy for the same amount of time. So what we've got is HMOs and big organizations that like hospitals that own doctors for the most part and can dictate to them how they will practice. That's really a shame, because what we lose is the doctor-patient relationship.
The personal connection.
Yeah, it's that sacred thing that has to do with healing. It's about being with somebody rather than doing something to them. There's a big difference between listening and caring and popping somebody with a drug that'll get them back on their feet and back to work temporarily. But over the long haul, that's not what the answer is going to be. It's going to be you've got to work the problems out. America is in such trouble because we're oppressed by the 1%. You know, that's what we're talking about on Occupy Wall Street. And we've got the 99%. Well, actually, what you're seeing is the bulk of the maybe the bottom 5%, because they're the ones who actually have the time to go to some of these events and camp out. But it's not all just them. I mean, there are a lot of people who are in the 99% and in the top part of that who are saying, we have to do something about these inequities. And what's amazing to me is it's been going on for several weeks now. Finally, the press has taken it is looking at it and reporting on it. And if this thing sustains, it will provide a nudge to awaken what's happening here in America especially, but all over the world, in terms of the oppression of the finances and power. But the underlying problem that we have when we're talking about money, okay, and materialism, is the Federal Reserve System. until we fix that, and until we have a monetary system of our own, rather than one that's independent from the government, independent from the U.S., and can regulate the finances of the country, we're going to continue to have these problems, because those are the people who are making all the money and having all the power and don't have much in the way of compassion for the masses. They're more interested in themselves. So all the work, all the outrage, all the problems that we're seeing on Occupy Wall Street, yeah, they're justified. Yes, they're making an awareness go up, but it won't change a thing until we address the problem that's underneath it all, and it's about the Federal Reserve. Most people think that the government prints its own money. The government has nothing to do with the Federal Reserve. The government borrows from the Federal Reserve. It's an independent private organization that doesn't have to tell you anything about when it's going to print money or what it does. It's totally corrupt. And every time a president has tried to do something to change that scenario, there's been an assassination. So what you're seeing is a huge, huge problem here that most of America is beginning to get a little bit of a taste of, but not enough. And that affects our health immensely, because it sets the stage for no jobs, no health insurance, not enough food. One person in seven is on food stamps now. The realistic number of the unemployed has got to be 15 or 20%, not 9%. We're in a real disaster, and we need to stick together. We need to find a way to go past the system that we have, and that's going to be a very interesting challenge, because that's where Occupy Wall Street has to go if there's going to be teeth in this thing that's going to make a difference. So we talk about more than 1 in 10 Americans are using antidepressants. That's the tip of the iceberg. What about the rest of us? We've got lots of problems, lots of issues. We're out of work. We're losing our homes. We can't afford to go to college. We come out of college and we don't have a job. Yeah, give me an SSRI, please.
Or you come back from war and get shot by a policeman.
Well, that too, or maybe you can't get a job after you come back from war. I mean, these are the very people that are serving their country are ones that when they come back, we forget fast. And that's what's happening. So we need to take a careful look at this. And we also have to appreciate the power of each one of us. That's what we forget. If we would be the change we want to see, and we would set the examples for others to follow, that at least would make the opportunity for people to notice what's happening in the example that you're setting. And if they like it, it may make a small change in how they think or how they act. And if enough people catch on to that, and we are being the change we want to see, then you won't see the power that comes from the corrupt government we have today, where Congress is owned by corporate America. You'll see that start to die off, because we won't support that kind of thing. We might actually get smart enough to spend our dollars in an intelligent way and only support those things that we think are good. If we had that kind of mentality, we could change the problems we have here in America and the rest of the world in a couple of days or a week.
One of the things, too, that I think is happening is with the Internet. You know, people are able to communicate about these things so much more.
No doubt that's true. And it's a way that we can communicate with one another. But the big thing is being the change you want to see, setting that example. Without that, there can never, ever be change. So we have to recognize that we have the power. The people have always had the power, but we don't exercise it. We think our vote or our action or how we behave doesn't count. But it does. And if there are enough of us who will adopt that kind of philosophical thinking, there is no doubt in my mind that we would see an immense change in how America functions. We'd go back to democracy. We might even go back to the concept of the village, where we say it takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a village for each individual person as well to be able to be the best that they can be. It's wonderful to have a village where the goal is to have community and to support one another and to love one another and to be able to give. That's a wonderful feeling. The narcissistic world that we've been driven to take up and use ourselves has led to where we are. So we have great disparities in wealth, in access to health care, in access to food, in every segment of our culture, whether it be business, law, medicine, religion, science, or whatever. So, yeah, 1 in 10 Americans are using antidepressants. The other 9 need some support, too.
You know, if you want to join in our conversation or you have any questions about our topics or your health, you can give us a call here at Prescriptions for Health at 888-874-4888. That's 874-4888.
Yeah, I'd love to hear some people who have ideas that are a little bit different than what we're talking about. Or if you think we're right on the mark, call us and tell us. Or give us an example or tell us a story of something that maybe you experienced that says the same thing.
You know, we have a friend in Argentina, and I just got an email earlier this morning about how he has leukemia, and he's been having a pretty hard time. He's pretty sick.
Oh, he had a bone marrow transplant. It was a big deal.
He finally decided that he would like to talk to a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking also about the last time that we saw him on Skype, and he'd been taking steroids, and it made him look different because you know how steroids can make people look like they're overweight or something when it's from the steroids.
Lots of benefits, but lots of side effects.
Well, there was an article that came out this week also about steroid medications that help to control inflammation, and they can be used for cancer as well as things like asthma and rheumatoid arthritis and mm-hmm. Crohn's disease and lupus and multiple sclerosis and so forth. But researchers found that 23,000 Americans in a government health survey using oral steroid medications were twice as likely to have severe vitamin D deficiency that can lead to serious softening of the bones and muscle pain. And this link is especially strong in children. Now, they didn't do this with the inhalers, but you could sort of think that might have a similar effect.
Well, you know there's going to be some effect there, because it's probably dose-related. And, of course, the dose that you get with an inhaler is much less. So, yeah, I think you got a great point there. And what this really is an association. We don't know why people who are on steroids tend to have lower levels of vitamin D by at least 50%.
But if you are on steroids, it's probably a good idea to have your doctor check your vitamin D level to decide whether you need to supplement. I mean, normally we get vitamin D from the sun and from fatty fish and dairy foods and from our multiple vitamins and so
forth.
Yeah,
the bulk of it's from the sun for sure. And that's what we should be focusing on. Everybody should be getting sunlight. We don't anymore. But it's time for your 2020 tip, Vicki. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So if you have a question about your health, or if you want to end the conversation, give us a call, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Well, this starts out with why I call him honey, because an elderly lady was invited to an old friend's home for dinner one evening, and she was impressed by the way that her lady friend preceded every request to her husband with endearing terms such as honey, my love, darling, sweetheart, and so forth. And the couple had been married almost 70 years, and clearly they were still very much in love.
Wow.
So while the husband was in the living room, her lady friend leaned over to her hostess to say, I just think it's wonderful that after all these years, you'll still call your husband all those loving names. And the elderly lady hung her head and she says, I have to tell you the truth. His name slipped my mind about 10 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And I'm scared to death to ask the cranky old jerk what his name is.
Jeez.
But I wanted to talk about some memory tips, you know, like exercising your body and exercising your brain, like trying to learn new things or doing crossword puzzles and so forth. But also, if you can include things in your diet like coconut oil,
yeah.
like you can cook with that, and it's recommended 3 tablespoons twice a day. So
yeah.
a good way to get it, I think, is to cook with it.
Well, it provides a kind of fuel, Vicki, that we normally don't get. The brain has an electrical brownout when we have Alzheimer's disease. It cannot produce enough ATP. It's sort of like a car not having enough gasoline to run on, because ATP is the energy currency of the cell. And so when it can't use sugar for its metabolism very well anymore, we give it a different fuel. And so giving it coconut oil is a great way to provide fat. It provides ketone bodies, which are the end result of the metabolism of these kinds of oils. And the brain loves ketone bodies, and it can come back to life to some extent. So a lot of people are recommending coconut oil.
It's also good for your skin. You can put it on your skin.
It's good for energy production.
And also you can take a couple tablespoons of flaxseed oil every day, and, mm-hmm. and vitamin D has been shown to improve cognitive decline, and niacinamide, and you can spice up your food with curcumin, that's
yep.
turmeric, and
check your B12 levels, because sometimes that's a real problem as we get older, and not just the level itself, but some of the other measures of B12, such as methylmalonic acid, it's called MMA, or homocysteine.
Well, too, if you want to know more about this, you can always find it on our website, drsaputo.com.
There's a lot. Put in Alzheimer's disease, and you'll see so many articles coming up. They're all in audio and video that are short that will answer your questions about things like this.
Well, I also wanted to mention about staying away from drugs like sleeping pills and antidepressants.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times older people end up in the hospital, and then the hospital loads them with these drugs, and then their
yeah.
family's like, oh, they're getting all confused.
Yeah.
Well, duh.
Right. What a big surprise, yeah.
And also if a person can just pay attention and focus on what they're doing. You know, I know that I find I get forgetful or whatever when I'm multitasking.
Yeah, well,
and
you've got so many things.
I can't remember what I did with something, you know, because I was interrupted or I was thinking of something else at the same time.
Well, you're so busy and do so many things. I'm surprised that you get anything done. It's remarkable the way you actually concentrate.
Well, also, just living a healthy lifestyle with a healthy diet and exercise, getting enough sleep, stress reduction, having a meaningful purpose in life. You know, when people get older, many times they don't have that purpose in life. And if they can do something or find something like a charity or to volunteer or to mm-hmm. babysit their grandchildren or take care of a pet or something that gives them a purpose in life, it might help them.
Well, I think a lot of people at age 65, they get their gold watch. They hated their job because it was only a source of making money for them. And now what do? Are you going to play golf every day or play tennis every day? I mean, life can be a big disappointment. And I think it's a lot of these people that are dying early because they have no purpose. But then there are lots of other people that are older. I mean, look at us. We're over 65. And you can't get much busier than we are. And I would say that we're in the prime of our life right now.
I feel like I'm in school again.
Well,
I have a lot of homework.
Well, we do. I mean, we're always reading and looking at new things to do, and we're involved with education. You know, we've got the Health Medicine Forum, the Nonprofit Educational Foundation. It's teaching about what health medicine is. And we have all the television stuff that we're doing, and you in particular, you're doing a once-a-week TV show that you host. I mean, talk about busy. I mean, we're the old folks. The young people can't keep up with this pace. I know they can't.
Well, we were talking about vitamin D with mm-hmm. steroids before my 2020 tip, and uh-huh. then we ended up talking about cognitive decline. But back to the vitamin D, you know, mm-hmm. there's a Spanish study showing that menopausal women pre and post have deficient levels of vitamin D, and they're attributing it to poor diet. But, you know, I was thinking,
well, that's
maybe these women don't want to wear bathing suits
anymore.
Well, so they don't
now
go
you've got
the
it.
Sun.
That's right. They're a little overweight. They're not going to put that bikini on when they go to the beach, so they're going to cover up.
Yeah, our body changes a little bit.
Now, why didn't this article point that out? They're talking about diet. I'm going, diet? I mean, where do you get most of your vitamin D? There's no question it's from the sun. And
well,
the only time actually you get that is between 10 and 2, because that's the only time the UVB light comes through. And a lot of people don't realize that UVB light does not go through windows. It doesn't go through clouds, fog, or smog. It won't go through rain. So unless you've got your skin exposed to the direct sunlight between 10 and 2, you're not going to get much vitamin D. And how much you need, it varies with who you are. It depends on what the pigmentation of your skin is. If you have a black skin, you're going to have to be out there longer because you're not going to get UVB rays getting through so much. If you have a Nordic skin and blue eyes, you may be out there 10 minutes and start to burn. So you have to find out what your body can take because you certainly don't want to get too much sun. I mean, that causes burning and wrinkles and cancer. But if you don't get enough, you're not going to get vitamin D.
So we figure for the average, I guess we should say...
average person needs about 15 or 20 minutes, but they need your skin. You need your skin exposed. I mean, if you say you live in San Francisco or New York, you know, and unless it's summertime, chances are you're going to have a shirt on, you might have a hat on, you're going to have pants
sunscreen.
On or a dress on. Yeah, and sunscreen to boot. And how much of your body is going to be exposed? Maybe the backs of your hands? And you could spend the whole
day
out
there. That's just what you want, the back of your hands. Yeah. You can get all these brown spots.
Exactly. Well, when you get older, you will. That's right. So you have to pay attention to things like that. And unless you really make a conscious effort to be in the sunlight, because today we have more of an indoor world. I mean, our jobs don't take us outside. They take us inside. And we aren't exercising near as much, at least not outdoors so much. And so where are you going to get sunlight? So it's not just women who are going through the menopause that have a problem. It's all of us because there's an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency. And, of course, that sets the stage for so many diseases like diabetes and osteoporosis and heart attacks and strokes and cancers. I mean, those are things to take note of.
It's an important vitamin.
Right. And does the supplement work as well as the sun? I'd like to see somebody do that study because I can't imagine that a supplement will do what the sun does. Look at all the frequencies of light that come from the sun.
It's also good for your immune system.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've got everything from gamma rays, which are dangerous to an extent, to the infrared light and radio waves. And our bodies need all of that stuff. And unless we have all of those things, we're going to have problems adapting with Mother Nature. And a lot of the time, we're not going to find that out until years have passed. And then, of course, it's too late for you.
You know, we should probably add this in lifestyle. You know, we're always talking about your diet and your exercise and so forth, but we should add that.
That's such a good point.
Because there's so many people that are telling us to stay out of the sun and you're going to get skin cancer and wrinkles and all that business.
Well, what do people look like in the U.S.? They're overweight.
I think a lot of that is to sell sunscreens is what that's about.
Well, yeah, and of course the sunscreens make it worse, and most of the sunscreens don't even work.
If you want to know more about that, go to drsaputo.com to Vicki's Corner.
Oh, you've got so much stuff
you'll hear about that.
Well, not only sunscreens, but you've got this whole free list of healthy household cleaning agents and cosmetics and things that you put on your skin that I think is invaluable. And anything that's on that list I know has been tested very well. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So give us a call if you have a question about your health. And we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about your health, give us a call.
And we've just heard that a lot of the power is out on the East Coast. So
right.
If you talk to your friends that are so disappointed because they missed us, tell them that they're archived on drsaputo.com.
Right, also on progressiveradionetwork.com. So you can always listen to all the past shows that we've done on both those sites.
You know, many U.S. surgeries on the elderly may be unwanted, with one out of three Americans covered under Medicare plans undergoing surgery in the last year of their life, and one out of five in the last month of their life, and the surgical procedure might not even improve their quality of life.
Right. She may be looking at biopsies or treatments for cancer, or maybe doing some surgeries that could that are elective, hip or knee or God knows what.
Or maybe a cancer surgery.
Sure. And, you know, what we should be doing is going back and listening to our patients and care about them and develop a relationship with them.
But, you know, some of these surgeries are clearly needed and they're helpful, but there probably is a substantial portion that are not needed.
Well, what's the job of the doctor? It's not just to do things to people, it's to be with people. And that's what we've lost.
And a lot of the elderly are starving for people to listen to them and to talk to them.
Well, they're alone and isolated.
Like you're always talking about.
Most people are dying alone, and when they do, it's in the hospital. There's been a trend for sure, particularly now that we have hospice that's grown to be such a major thing, where you can die in your own home with the people that you know that you love and that are close to you. There's a lot involved with trying to decide how to manage somebody who you know isn't going to be alive much more than a year. And that takes a team effort. You certainly need the doctor. You need to have the family. You need the patient. You need a spiritual guide. You need a bean counter, somebody who's going to look at economics and decide how much are we going to spend on this? How much is it worth it to do that? And this is a kind of collective decision that should be made. It's not something that's just let's do everything we possibly can to keep you alive, which has been the motto of most doctors. It's like life is precious. We do everything we can with our technology. Don't worry about the costs.
Yeah, we have to think about the quality of the person's life.
Yeah, well, what matters? I mean, if you're going to die from something, say you have a pancreatic cancer, you're really going to go out and start doing conventional treatment that will have less than 5% chance of doing anything to extend your life or improve the quality of your life?
You know, one of the things that I've noticed is that many times people that have something like cancer, that like you were mentioning, maybe pancreatic cancer, their families want them to live. And
yeah.
And many times the families pressure the person to do some of these horrible surgeries that are just really invasive that may not improve, they're not going to improve their quality of life because they feel so miserable after having had the surgery. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things to think about. Is it really worth it to do this? If you really love somebody, do you want them to have a poor quality of life or do you want them to die in peace?
Yeah, well, that's right.
I think they're going to die anyway.
You know, as I was sick with my hip problem and all the things that went into it, I really thought that I was dying because we had lots of blood work that showed that I was way sicker than I looked. And the thought crossed my mind, I must have cancer or I must have a vasculitis or some other life-threatening disease. And then I thought, you know, am I prepared to die? And the answer was, yeah, I could do that. That would be okay. But the thing that bothered me is, what about you, Vicky? And what about my kids and your kids? And what about the rest of our families and our friends? Yeah, and grandkids. How would that be for them? And the answer all of a sudden just woke me up. It was like, I've got to pull through this thing. I don't want to cause that kind of depression for people that I care about. So you're right. It needs to be done in a very careful way that is thoughtful about the patient and thoughtful about the families. And we should be listening to the family and to the grandkids and to the friends about, well, what's the best thing? What are we going to settle for here? Let's have a little congregation that says, what are the best things to do? How aggressive do we want to be? How hard do we want to fight against death?
You know, my dad had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and many times that's responsive to chemotherapy. But maybe I can tell that story when we come back after my tip.
Yeah, we also have a call that's waiting, too, that we'll take when we come back because it's time for your 2020 trip. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuti here with Nurse Vicky. The number is 888-874-4888. So if you have a question about your health, give us a call, and we'll be taking your calls after Vicky's final 2020 tip.
Want to love group of professors asked a group of 4 to 8-year-olds what love means, and the answers were broader and deeper than anyone could have imagined.
Yeah, kids have a way of doing that, don't they?
This little girl, age 8, she says, well, when my grandmother got arthritis, she couldn't bend over and paint her toenails anymore, so my grandfather does it for her all the time, even when his hands got arthritis too. Now that's love.
Yeah, for sure.
When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that your name is safe in their mouth. That was a little boy 4.
That's beautiful.
And a little boy 5 says, love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and smell each other.
Well, there's some truth to that.
Here's one. Love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs.
All right.
Love is what makes you smile when you're tired. Love is when my mommy makes coffee for my daddy and she takes a sip before giving it to him to make sure the taste is okay.
That's great.
Love is when you kiss all the time. Then when you get tired of kissing, you still want to be together and you talk more. My mommy and daddy are like that. They look gross when they kiss. Love is, this is from a little boy age 7. His name's Bobby. Love is what's in the room with you at Christmas if you stop opening presents and listen.
Oh, boy. Wow. There's a profound statement.
If you want to learn to love better, you should start with a friend who you hate.
There's a test.
Love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt and then he wears it every day. Love is like a little old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well. During my piano recital, I was on a stage and I was scared. And I looked at all the people watching me and I saw my daddy waving and smiling. He was the only one doing that and I wasn't scared anymore.
That's great.
My mommy loves me more than anybody. You don't see anybody else kissing me to sleep at night.
Right.
Love is when mommy gives daddy the best piece of chicken. Love is when mommy sees daddy smelly and sweaty and still says he's handsomer than Robert Redford. Love is when your puppy licks your face even after you've left him alone all day. Love is when mommy sees daddy in the toilet and she doesn't think it's gross.
Oh, my gosh.
And here's one. A 4-year-old child whose next-door neighbor was an elderly gentleman who had recently lost his wife. And upon seeing the man cry, the little boy went into the old gentleman's yard and he climbed into his lap and he just sat there. And when his mother asked what he'd said to the neighbor, the little boy said, nothing. I just helped him cry.
Oh, that's beautiful. Wow. They get your heartstrings, Vicki. It brings you back to earth. And sometimes it's the kids, you know, who see things so clearly because they haven't had time to go through all the things that we have where we've unlearned a lot of those things that we knew just kind of naturally. Anyway, this is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we have a call from Jack in Manhattan. Hi, Jack. Are you there?
Oh, yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How are you?
Oh, okay. How are you? Good. Good. I just had a question about TMS. Are you familiar with it at all? Or
yes.
It's a transcranial magnet. Oh, you are.
Yeah, transcranial magnet stimulation.
Yeah. I know ECT is kind of scary. This one.
Kind of scary. Yeah, it's very scary when you're talking about electroshock therapy.
Yeah, but this one, I noticed there's sometimes it affects your memory and it affects your thinking and things like that. And I mean, I guess it's probably maybe not, hopefully not permanent. But have you heard any bad things about it? Or
well, it's another technique that's designed to treat people for depression. Okay. Who don't seem to be able to break the cycle of the depression. And I think things like that are reasonable in some cases, but in general, not my cup of tea. Have you been depressed yourself, Jack? Is this for you or a friend or a family member?
No, it's actually for ringing in the ears. I'm doing it for that.
Oh, I don't think I would recommend it for that as a first shot. What I would do, do you have any problems with headaches?
Problems with headaches? No.
Yeah. Do you have have you injured your neck or do you have a sore neck?
No.
When you press behind your ears, behind those big bumps back there, is it sore? Go ahead and press back there.
No.
There's no tenderness at all.
Are you on any medications?
There's no tinnitus? What?
I'm sorry?
You're saying I don't have tinnitus? Is it?
No, I'm not. You're the only one that knows that. What I'm trying to do is find out if there's a problem in your neck that could do that.
Yeah.
A lot of people, when their cervical spine is not aligned properly, will wind up with tinnitus.
Uh-huh.
And what you can do is you can treat that either with chiropractic manipulation or with infrared light therapy, if you can find it. That's what I use in my practice that I find very successful for treating a lot of people who have tinnitus. Some people who have severe TMJ problems, you know, their temporomandibular joint problems, can have it treated that way. But I wouldn't move forward to big things like this until because they're relatively new and we don't know that much about them. And even though they can have wonderful effect, and it may be what you ultimately wind up with, it's not what I would recommend as a start-off treatment. Have you been to a chiropractor?
Well, no. I mean, my tinnitus was mostly from loud noises, I'm pretty sure.
That could be. And that may be that you have sensory neural loss there.
Yeah.
That is not going to repair itself. And that may be something that you cannot fix. In that case, you may have to move on to things like what you're talking about. So you could give that some thought, Jack.
Okay.
I would talk to the people who do it. I don't use that in my practice. It's a pretty specialized thing. And so I would talk to them and see what they have to say. And chances are that if it's caused by loud noises, that you're right. You've got sensory neural loss, and that tinnitus is very difficult to treat.
That's got to be annoying.
Yeah, that's got to be really annoying.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the best I can do for you, Jack. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thanks.
Have
good
a
luck
good day.
With that.
All right. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we have a call from Maxine in California. Hi, Maxine.
Hi, Dr. Len. You know, I had some technical difficulty at the beginning of your show, and I always look for an update as to how you are doing. And I think I missed that part. How are you doing?
Well, that's because it was short and sweet, because I'm doing so well. I'm 2 weeks post-op, and I'm walking without any assistance now if I want to. So that's amazing. I went to work last week, and I'll be working full-time this week. So
it still hurts,
yeah, it's a little sore.
And
I mean,
tired.
It was a major surgery. But I'm so excited about getting rid of that metal poisoning, that all those problems with cobalt.
I was following that very closely.
Yeah, and you're going to be getting a newsletter as one of my patients, because I recognize you. You're going to be getting a newsletter that talks about a little bit more about metallosis and my story.
Yeah, because it doesn't just go away overnight.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I'm going to look for that. I'm very interested in that.
All right, so what's your situation then?
Well,
what's your question?
I have a dear friend who, it's a sort of a chronic condition he has since 2007, where, you know, he gets extreme pain in the feet and legs. Sometimes it subsides but doesn't go away entirely, and then it just flares up, and you know, the pain is so severe, you know, he can't, you know, function normally.
Sure.
And he's tried every different alternative and mainstream therapies. He must have been to, I can't even count the number of different types of doctors. And this one doctor feels it's the nerves coming down from the spine and is now recommending he take something under anesthesia, have cortisone injected into the spine.
That's called an epidural injection. It does not need to be done under general anesthesia, for sure. It can be done under just a little local. I mean, they give you a little lidocaine injection there first, so it doesn't hurt when you give the injection. But there's no reason to be doing general anesthesia. That's overkill.
Yeah.
These are designed to treat people who have sciatica, meaning that the nerves that pass out of the spine between the discs can be compressed. And when the sciatic nerve is compressed, it causes symptoms in the legs and sometimes in the feet. And there are treatments. I bet he hasn't tried infrared light therapy, has he?
Well, he's tried so many things. I'm going to have to ask him about that.
I'll bet he hasn't, because it's so uncommon.
Yeah.
That would be something that would be a lot safer. And it does basically the same thing as an epidural injection does, because it quiets down those nerves that are inflamed, and it causes healing. It also increases circulation, so the tissues have more in the way of ATP, which is the energy currency of the cell. And as I said, it speeds up the healing process by about 50%. It increases lymphatic drainage, so there's not so much congestion there. It lowers the temperature of the nerve, so it becomes somewhat smaller. And if you could do all those things and quiet down the irritability of the nerve itself at the same time, you may just be able to get somebody who has sciatica out of that sciatic pain and back on their feet in a matter of just a few days. And it's not always that way, and in some people it simply doesn't work. It's always worth a try, and I think it's always a better thing to do than the invasive injections that are done into the spine.
At least try it first.
Yeah, at least try it.
Right. And they sort of predicted this would be like a 50-50 chance of it working, this injection of cortisone.
I wouldn't give it numbers like that. I'd give it a much better chance of having an effect that's good. I think for most people, the cortisone works darn well. It's just that it's not my first choice. I like the idea of doing infrared light therapy, of working on alignment through chiropractic, working on body work, doing mental imagery. And if we do those as a management approach to pain, I'd say most of the time, 80-90% of the time, will help you at least 50% with your pain, and a lot of the time get rid of it entirely.
Sometimes certain stretches help it too.
Yeah, there are lots of things your chiropractor or physical therapist can help you with.
He's never been diagnosed with sciatica.
Yeah, that's right.
He has not been diagnosed with sciatica.
What the doctor's talking about. That's what sciatica is. When you give an injection in the spine to try and relieve the pain in the leg, they're talking about treating sciatica, because that's what it is. You just didn't know that.
And the steroids, help the pain, but they slow the healing, right?
They slow it down, yeah. They're anti-inflammatory, and they're beautiful that way, so it's a nice thing to do, but it delays healing and actually retards it. So that if you do it 3 or 4 times, you're getting to a place where it starts to get dangerous, because those tissues will be so weak that it gets dangerous.
And try the light.
Well, there are lots of things to try before you start doing things that are aggressive like that or doing surgeries. Does that make sense, Maxine?
Oh, it makes sense to me, but I'm talking to this dear friend who feels he's done so many things over 4 years, and he's desperate.
Does he live locally?
He lives in, San Mateo.
Okay, so he could come and see me if he wanted to. Talk to him about it and let us know what happens. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Stay well. Right.
Bye. Okay, you too. Bye-bye. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Stuart from Los Angeles. Hi, Stuart.
You can hear me okay, right?
Hear you just fine. How are you?
Okay. To be honest?
Be honest, yeah. I mean it. How are
accident.
You?
We had a car accident the other day, so I have a broken rib. But I've got other problems.
Oh, you're getting up there. If you're talking about your prostate, you must be over 50 or 60.
Yeah, I turned 60 this year. So
welcome.
Thank you. The enlarged prostate is the main problem, and there are others that have developed because of it, like urinary tract infection,
yes.
Small stone in the bladder.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I've had CAT scan, x-rays. Uh-huh. I have to do a stress. Let me back up a little bit. I have my back up against the wall, because I was told by this urologist that something has to be done by the end of the year, and he's talking about a green light laser procedure. And let's see, that would be for the stone, and then for the prostate, he's talking about robotic prostatectomy simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, anytime you're talking about doing things to the body, particularly surgical, mm-hmm. my eyebrows go up a little, even though I know darn well that a lot of people who have an enlarged prostate are going to have some kind of surgical procedure. And as you get older, it doesn't get any better. So what can you do? I'm going to assume you've tried salt palmetto.
Yeah.
And you've tried that for a period of about 6 months?
Oh, 6 months? Probably a month or two.
I'd give it a little bit longer. And have you tried any of the drugs like Avodart?
Yeah, he's got me on that right now. And at the same time, I'm taking something else that's an herbal mixture. I'm hoping that there's some way I can do something about it, I don't know, without getting the surgery, but I'm wondering if it's too late.
Too late for to try the other alternatives? How many times are you getting up at night to urinate?
It's been getting better. It was maybe up to 5.
And what's it average now?
You know what? I think I actually counted 9 one night.
Well, what's it been generally lately?
Since I've been taking these things, probably maybe 2 times.
Why don't you live with that? You don't have to do surgery.
I don't have a prostate, and I have to do.
Well, we'll have to give you one, Vicky, so you know what we're talking about. I don't think there's any requirement to do surgery for this. I think most of the time the urologists like to do surgery for a lot of reasons. They like to
do things.
That's what their business is. That's right. So I don't see any rush at all, Stuart. Okay. I think you could sit tight with this until, you know, it doesn't work. Some people do real well with the things we talked about. Some people use things like Cardura or Hytron that can add a lot to relaxing the neck of the bladder. I think you still have some medical things to try, some drugs to try that could be helpful. Once in a while, a drug is a good thing.
Before doing a surgery.
Yeah, like that. So that's my advice, Stuart. Thanks for calling.
Even if it's 3 times as big as normal?
I don't care how big it is. It's how it affects you clinically. So unless he's worried about a cancer, I wouldn't be doing anything aggressive if I were you.
Yeah, he can't. He said while he's in there, he'll check around the bladder to see if there's cancer in there.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear her.
That's okay. She said sometimes there are side effects from the surgery, indeed. You can have things like urinary leakage and sexual you lose your sexual ability. So it's if you don't have to do it, I say I give it some time.
Yeah, they don't know if it's cancer or not. He said when he's inside the bladder, he's going to check to see if there's any cancer.
There are lots of ways to check for that before you do a surgery. So you might want to get a second opinion from another urologist.
Like a scan, huh?
Okay.
Well, maybe. We're doing MRIs with spectroscopy up here sometimes, and you can look at the PSA. There are lots of things you could do to assess this. So thanks for calling, Stuart. It's nice to talk to you. Okay. Bye-bye. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have another call from Murray from Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Murray.
Hello.
How are you, Murray?
Hi. You can hear me well?
Perfect.
Oh, good. I have been dealing with pneumonia. I had been in the hospital for a couple of weeks in the summer, and I just... I'm still dealing with, like, coughing up phlegm and congestion.
Uh-huh. I think that's normal for having had pneumonia. A lot of the time we see that for weeks afterwards. I would stay in touch with your doctor. They may want to do another chest x-ray, or if they're really concerned, a CT scan. And that's how I would approach that. I wouldn't assume that you have something terrible just because you're still coughing up some stuff. So,
what do you think of x-rays and how to recover from the radiation?
Well, you could take some vitamin C before you take the x-ray. I think that would be a good idea. That'll protect you against it. And I'm afraid we're out of time because the show is over. We've got about 15 seconds to close here. So you can check back with us next week if you want. So So I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'd like to remind you that we'll be back to live to talk about what's new in the news in health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and DrSaputo.com. And from 3 to 4 Eastern Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time, they'll also be archived on DrSaputo.com.
And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week.